The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
I would say a colleague. We're not great friends. I wish that we were. Tyson Leslie, how you doing? Welcome to the Realm Network and to the brand. And these guys and girls, there are a few girls, are going to love you. Let me just tell you, this guy is badass. First off, he's one of the only musicians that I know that actually does anything. As I had somebody cancel like 12 minutes before a podcast, and I literally wanted to go off and wring their neck because I always want to help musicians and I want to help our kind. And then it's like, please don't let me down. And I just want to, and then there's you, and you are like the most perfect, quintessential, amazing musician, talent, artist that I know. I met you at we were opening for, oh God, it was somebody, and then Vixen was there. Who was it?
I think it was it Jasmine?
Great White? No, did I meet you before then?
I don't know. I don't remember. But yeah, what was that down in Florida? I don't even remember where
State
that
Fair.
Was.
It was the Kentucky State Fair.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Florida, Kentucky.
That's right. Yeah. It was warm outside. All I remember that is that for sure.
And you blew my mind because you play how many instruments?
I don't know. I haven't really sat down to count.
A lot.
Basically, if it has strings, I can usually figure it out. I don't do well with brass instruments. That's one thing I can't do. No horns, no trumpets, or any of those kinds of things. But
okay, guys, you're going to have to look this guy up because he will blow your mind in like so many different... I was so blown away by watching. And it's like, I don't care after this many years. I've been doing this shit since I was 3 years old, bro. It's just... it's not... There's rarely is there anything other than a movie. Movie is all that I have left to like talk about because it's like you look at the end credits and like all these people did all this stuff, but like when my friends were like, oh, do you want to go see a concert? I'm like, not really. And you blew me away. Just
well, thank you.
So talented.
I kind of got to that point too in my own, you know, with concerts and stuff for a little while. I had to kind of find a way to fall in love with it again. I mean, when you work behind the scenes and you do as many shows as we all do, sometimes it does lose its luster, even the big ones. You know, you go to the big ones like at an arena and whatever, and you're still like, eh. And what? So I had to find a way to kind of get back into it again.
Why do you think you, like, so you play the biggest of the big. Why do you think that you get like that? Because I get that way, and this audience, they are, I just got to tell you, they're freaking amazing, and they're going to eat this up. I get that way when I, because I've played the arenas, and then when I'm at the smaller shows, sometimes I love it, but sometimes the people are kind of shitty and I get on this pity party camp of like, I wish they were treating me like they did when I played at the arenas. And
sure.
I get that way because I feel like maybe these people don't know my full potential. So why would you get that way when you're at a freaking arena playing with like, and tell people who you've played with. First off, your own stuff, we'll get into that in a minute.
Well, those kind of shows are still exciting to me. I'm talking about just going to concerts, you know.
Got it.
But playing the shows, I'll never get tired of that.
Okay, good.
No matter what,
like, man, there's no
the venue or whatever, I'm always good to play. You know, and I think everybody has their moments where, oh man, I don't feel like playing today. I'm tired or whatever. But as soon as you kind of get over that and get on stage and you're ready to do your thing, it's not unlike, as cheesy as it is, it's not unlike Sylvester Stallone turning his hat around, getting ready to do the arm wrestling. It's the same kind of mentality. You just kind of put on the pants. You just change the pants and then you're ready to go. And you give it, you know, hopefully if you're a seasoned musician, I guess, or whatever, you know what to do. You give it all you got until it's over. And then when it's over, you can go pass out in a hotel room somewhere or whatever it is that you happen to be in. Sometimes it's just in the back of a van while the rest of your drunken bandmates are acting like idiots, you know. And so it just kind of depends on the scenario and whatever you're in, I guess.
And you have been doing this since you were We're going to talk about it too. If you want to, you can. If you don't, you don't have to, but it is public. Sure. I did see like your whole airlift, airdrop, whatever it's called. I don't have the exact name in front, but I just saw that before we got on here, and I'm like, my mind is blown. So if you want to just mention that later on, I would love to. But I segue into, I saw a lot of pictures of you as a tiny child playing everything, even drums.
Yeah, my dad got me a little drum kit when I was a kid. Now, that's not saying that I was any good at them at that time. But I actually didn't really start playing drums seriously until, you know, I would say, gosh, in the last... last 10 years, if I'm being generous, I guess. And part of that was just because I was thrown in a situation, you know, I do the dueling piano bar thing. And so when I do that, the musicians are kind of required, not necessarily 100%, but it helps your partner if you're able to be a multi-instrumentalist. So sometimes I'll be like, hey, can you jump on the drums on this next song? Because it just feels better when you have rhythm behind it. And so in my situation, I just learned how to play better by playing more often. So, you know, when you play four nights a week, five nights a week, you're going to get better at whatever that instrument is.
What other instruments did you start on first when you were young? Like, what did you just gravitate toward? And did your dad hook you up with that again? Or was there something
my mom says I started playing piano when I was three. I don't know how true that is or not, but it was the kind of thing where maybe in one of those pictures you saw, we had this little, it was almost like a toy organ. It sounded terrible, but it came with these little music books, and you can kind of just read the numbers based on the keys and stuff like that. And then I'd say around when I was first grade, I started taking actual piano lessons from a lady that lived up the street from me. And so did that for several years. And learning classical music, things like, you know, playing Mozart and Bach and Beethoven and all that kind of stuff. Wow. And then I would say, I don't remember what age I was, maybe around age 8 or 10 or somewhere around that time period. I entered a talent contest in Greeley, Colorado, where I lived at the time. Then I won that contest, and the money that I received from it, which was $100, I took and bought my first guitar at a pawn shop. My dad took me and got my first electric guitar, because at that point it was more Motley Crue and Twisted Sister and Quiet Riot. Like, I was into that stuff, and I was like, piano's dumb. Yeah, I don't want to play this anymore. I want to play guitar. So I taught myself how to play guitar, and then everything else just kind of fell into place depending on the gig that I was doing. So I was doing a gig with a band called Jet Black out of Kansas City for a little while. And I switched from keyboards to bass because the bass player in the band quit. And so I bought like a $80 PV bass that I gave to my son a couple of years ago. And I just kind of learned how to, like a lot of guitar players, a lot of bass players start out as guitar players, and then they kind of reluctantly end up playing bass. But what I found is I really, really enjoy playing it. It's a little bit less thinking that you have to do in terms of like chords and you know, less strings, less things to do. But then I was really heavily influenced by really flashy guys like Billy Sheehan and, you know, Victor Wooten, and guys that can do all this, like make an instrument that's typically boring cool. And so I was like, I want to do that. So I played bass in that band for a little while, and then eventually ended up back on keyboards because of whatever, in different bands and different scenarios and people hiring me for this or that or the other. And so now it's just kind of like anything goes. You want guitar for this? Okay, cool. You know, and whatever it is, I'll try to figure it out. Usually if it's not like extraordinarily complex, I can usually manage to get my way through it.
I think your greatest talent is your versatility and the fact that you show up. Like, you're just somebody that I know, no matter what somebody looks you for, that you're going to show up and like get it done. You're like, you're like Dave Grohl status on the talent.
Well, thank you very much.
What was the first show that you got called for where it was like your holy shit moment?
The first one I did was in 2008. And there's a band, a local band called Banshee out of Kansas City that back when I was a kid, like eighth, ninth grade, they were the biggest band in town.
Okay.
You know, and they were the only band that had a video on Headbangers Ball and that kind of stuff going on. And so, and they'd long broken up by, 2008, but they got a call to do the Rocklahoma Festival that year. Ooh. But for whatever reason, and I'm not really sure what the reason is exactly, because it just depends on who you ask, the bass player couldn't do it. And so they called me to fill in for Bill. And and unfortunately, Bill died of cancer last year. But he and I ended up becoming friends after the fact, too. Like, I had never met him before I did the Banshee gig. So it was big shoes to fill, in my opinion, because it was a band that I looked up to a lot when I was younger. And so... I jumped in there and learned all the songs, and we went to the festival and played, and it was a lot of fun. And that was one of those big 80s metal festivals. So all the bands that were playing were like bands that I loved growing up. So it was like Extreme and Triumph and Kingdom Come and Living Color and Bret Michaels and Sebastian Bach and blah, blah, blah. Just tons and tons of acts. So that was my first kind of introduction into that whole world. And I never would have thought in a million years in 2008 that I would end up becoming friends with most of those people that were on those stages.
Isn't that cool?
A decade later or whatever. So it is cool. It's kind of surreal and a little weird, but I mean, and we'll kind of get to that later, but that was my first kind of introduction to that whole universe. Big festivals, outdoors. There was a big tornado. Well, not a tornado, but it wasn't quite a tornado. It was just extremely heavy winds. I saw an ATM machine go blowing across the lawn, and two of the side stages both collapsed from the wind that year. It was totally crazy, but it was an incredible experience. And I got to see Janie Lane right before he died, and it was one of his last shows. And I remember me and my buddy Tommy, we're like, well, let's watch Warrant until they kind of shit the bed and Janie starts acting like an idiot and whatever. Because the week prior, there was a lot of video going around of him just being completely trashed in Vegas and doing a terrible show. And man, I was wrong. Like, they absolutely stole the entire festival. He was incredibly good. Yeah. And the whole band was great. And we stood in the pouring ass rain watching that whole show until the end. And I looked at Tommy like, okay, that was amazing. Let's go get dried off, because we were soaked from head to toe. But that was my first, that was my first big experience there.
I love that, and I love what you said about the relationships. I did a podcast today for somebody in Australia, and they were, they were asking me, like, who was good to you when you first started wrestling, or who do you still talk to? And like, when I started going through the list of, like, people that I talk to on a daily basis or once a week, or I could call between, guys in the Bret Michaels band or wrestlers or this or that, it's like, if everything were to go away tomorrow, which it won't, it already did in 2020, so come on back.
right.
The thing that I treasure the most is the relationships and the friendships that I've made, and that I can still talk to people and call them today. It's like, that is worth to me.
Absolutely. It's
weight in gold. And like, we did that benefit a while ago for Neil Peart. Please tell me you were there and I didn't just imagine that you were there.
I was. I played on Working Man. And,
okay, yeah.
And then I played keys on a couple songs.
Well, I remember you were there with like some hot chick, which was probably your wife, or I just trying to remember you were at the bar sitting there. And, like, I think of people that called me to do that and just how long we've been friends, or that I would never bail out on them, or I know if I needed them, like Sean Harrison, that I would be there for me. And I don't even know you that well, but like, when we needed a bass, we still need a bass player. We were just not using one anymore. We have a bass track. I called you, I called you to ask for help with, like, could you help me figure out some people to be in our video? And you don't have to help me. You don't have to do anything for me, but you did. And it's like that sort of stuff is why I do this, for the relationships. And then, because people come and go, but it's the people that stay. Even the people that are listening and watching this, if you're a subscriber to Russo's Brand, more love to you. If you're on our Patreon, so much love to you. And we'll get into your stuff and what you're doing and your different platforms that you're just all, you're doing so much. I want to talk about that, but I just want to lay the land on first big show you did was Rocklahoma. And then let's just bring people up to speed so they can be as in awe of you as I am of, you know, some of the things that you've done and the feathers in your hat, because it's a really big deal. When I saw you with Vixen, like just showing up, just like taking names and numbers, like, oh, I'll just do this or I'll do that. That's huge, because it's hard to just come in and like be that player that can fill in any hole or any gap. That's the hardest thing of all. Like, how, what came be preceded that? And then where did, how did you get that gig? That's a cool story, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I mean, for me, a lot of it is just being a big fat music nerd. So like I had, you know, behind this wall, there's about 3,500, 4,000 CDs in all in totes and crates or whatever that I haven't used since I moved here, because everything's
digital,
all in your phone now. But I've always just been a big fan of music. And so, like, if you go to my page, it says, you know, everything music from ABBA to Zappa. I genuinely like all of it. Like, I don't have guilty pleasures, because if I like it, I just like it. I mean, I don't really care what anybody thinks of whether they're cool or not.
What is your site?
Picture. Oh, just like, you know, just, I'm just like on my Facebook page or things like that. You know what I mean? It's, I have always been, you know, whether it's, there's a lot of things that, like, for example, like a band like Hanson, you know, a lot of people go, whatever. Yeah. These guys are great. I mean, like, I've continually followed them into their adulthood, and they ended up becoming this extraordinary band that a lot of people don't even realize they're still together, you know, and still put out really good records. And you know, I'm a huge fan of ABBA and that Swedish kind of pop music and stuff like that. But I'm also a huge fan of Testament and Slayer, you know, and I'm also a huge fan of Motley Crue and whatever, but Billy Joel, as long as it's good, it's good. And that's kind of my thoughts on that. But and all of, so that, because of that, I know a lot of music, I know a lot of songs. Mm-hmm. So particularly when I get into scenarios where it's a cover band type of situation, there's a good chance I'm going to know at least 80-90% of your list before I even show up, because wow. I'm just a nerd. Like, if you, I do streaming shows 4 nights a week, mm-hmm. and people can look at a song list if they're kind of going, well, I don't know what to think of, what to pick or what to, for a request. So my list has about, I don't know, 3,200 songs on it you can choose from. And so, I mean, that's kind of what, to answer your question, that's kind of how it allows me to get plugged into things pretty quickly. And then because of all of that experience and playing other people's music, it's really easy for me to fall into other situations and even ear my way through it. For example, we played a festival called M3 a couple of years ago, and we had an after party, and the band XYZ invited me to play with them and sit in with them. And they gave me a couple songs, but I didn't know the songs. I'd never heard them. He's like, oh, you'll be fine. I was like, okay, what key is it in? Hey, okay, cool. Go ahead and start. I'll figure it out. And I did, you know, I just, because music, unless it's like Dream Theater or, you know, something extremely complex, a lot of times you can kind of feel like, okay, we're going to go to the four chord on this next part, or you're going to go to the, you just kind of have music is repetitive, mm-hmm. and it's usually set in, you know, groups of four and things. So most music, not everything obviously, but most kind of popular music is set in a way that it's fairly predictable. So because of that, it allows people like me to just go, okay, I know where we're going to go in this song. And if I'm, you know, on a keyboard, one thing about that instrument is, so unless it's an extremely, like, this is the driving the song kind of piano part, mm-hmm. you can usually kind of lay out and go, okay, and just kind of come in on the next note, that type of stuff. So, I don't know. That's the best way I can answer that. Is just how I can get thrown into those kind of situations.
And practical, too.
And it's kept me working, you know, a lot. It's kept me employed. Between just the song knowledge and stuff like that, and then the stuff you mentioned earlier about just showing up on time and just being, you know, good at communication, just being good with people overall. I think that all of those things encompass what's going to lead you to success later on. So,
I agree.
But all the things you mentioned also with people not showing up and those kinds of things, those kind of, that, you're only as good as your reputation in this business. And so if you have a reputation for not showing up, or if you have a reputation for being difficult or whatever it is, that word gets around really fast, even in the higher. And if you watch that movie, Hired Gun, Alice Cooper mentions, he's like, we always know the top people in their instruments. We just know, people talk about it. We know ahead of time, okay, if this guitar player is going to leave, I've got another guy in mind over here that I've been talking to or thinking about trying out for a while, because his name keeps coming up. And so how did I get the Vixen call? I don't even know how that ended up happening, because I was pulling into a Target or pulling out of it, one or the other. I think I was leaving.
Great story starts.
Yeah. And this guy named Tony Higbee was called me on the phone, and Tony plays guitar for a guy named Tom Kiefer, who is the singer from Cinderella. And I didn't really know Tony very well yet, because I was still pretty new to town. And so I was like, what the hell is this guy calling me for? But I answered, because, you know, whatever.
Yeah, and, Target.
Yeah, right. And he goes, hey, Cher Ross from the band Vixen is looking for a keyboard player that can do tour managing duties. Is that something you can do? And yeah, sure. I did some, tour managing for a band that I used to be in, that I was in for a good 8 to 10 years, and toured all over the United States in a band and trailer, eating each other's peanut butter and smelling each other's farts and the whole deal. And so I kind of have an idea of how that works. I mean, I hadn't done it on that big of a scale before, but how hard could it be? And so another thing that you kind of learn in this business is, say yes and apologize later.
Just go,
okay, yeah, sure. And then you'll figure it out or you won't. And so in this case, it was pretty easy. I know how to book flights. I know how to book hotels. I know how to make sure the right equipment shows up to the venue.
So that's what you did. Travel, yeah. Backline.
And backline's probably the biggest one, because that's the one that gets messed up the most often. So, for example, we showed up to L.A. At the Whiskey to do a video shoot for our last single that we put out. And everything I had ordered was wrong. The drums were wrong. The keyboard was one that I had to look on YouTube to learn how to program it in like 10 minutes. I had to program it really quick and get ready for the show.
Shit.
And I was like, please don't unplug this keyboard, because if you do, I'm going to be totally screwed. And we were shooting a video, so the camera crew's there and they're all waiting. And I'm like, so we ended up having to run all over town. Fortunately, we were in LA where we knew a lot of people. So we're just like calling our friends like, hey, can you bring a bass guitar? Hey, can you bring this and that, whatever.
Why
and everybody came through. What's that?
Why did they? I mean, LA, they're going to screw it up. Jesus.
I know, of all places. But you know, what's funny is LA is also the most
flaky.
I don't know if flaky is the right word, but they're more like, they're more aggressive, because they act, they act like they're cool and they've done it before. It's like, well, I realize that we're at this legendary venue and whatever, but this is also a band it's not like we're some nobody that we, trying to come in acting like big shots. I just literally just want, here's the list, here's the email of the stuff I sent you that I needed, and none of this stuff is right. And I had to learn really quickly that sometimes you kind of have to be hardballish with people, and I'm not very good at that. I'm a pretty easygoing guy, but when things get like super stressful like that, you still got to be able to work under pressure and make things happen and make sure that we come out. And we did. And by the time the show was, it was showtime, everything went just fine. But
that's a lot on you though, and I would not have been that cool under pressure.
But those are the kinds of things that do happen and can happen, will happen. We went over to Germany and we had no idea where we were staying, and the guy that was promoting us wouldn't return my call because he was a dick, and I was just like, man. And he was difficult all the way up until we got there, and I was like, and everybody's looking at me like, what, how come you didn't this and that and that? I was like, I did, here's this, here's the email, here's the call. Like, the guy's just, so sometimes you end up working with folks like that, and you just have to, again, pull up your pants and get through it. And by the time you do, usually it's fine. In every scenario like that, we haven't had anything where it's just like, otherwise I wouldn't have a job. I'd be fired. Those kinds of things, that's what you're expected to do. You're expected to kind of have grace under pressure and make it work. And so that's what I do.
I think that everyone, I always say everyone should be in a band. Everyone should have to drive a really big rig like we do, because it's just different. You have more respect for truck drivers or buses or tour buses.
Yeah.
You know, just not to be in their blind spot or just to be an asshole on the road. And then being in a band, there's just nothing like that. Being in one or filling in for one, it's just, you know, you think your wife or your partner compromising with them is a big deal. Like, try compromising with a whole group of people where, you know, one person wants to go to McDonald's and the other person hates McDonald's and this person wants to go here. I don't want to stop for a coffee, or, and you just have to kind of concise and, you know, do what's good for the group and kind of take care of each other. And it's a whole different thing. And when people are like, well, do you know where you're going? I'm like, no, it doesn't matter where I'm going, because it's going to change by the time we are 8 hours on the road anyway. Or it doesn't matter if what's booked or not, because there's a mess, there's a tornado going on, and we're just going to take whatever we can get. We're going to get there, we're contracted, it's probably not. And it's like, a lot of people that are normal, like my normal friends, I don't know how you can do all of that. And it's just like, you just go with the flow, grace under fire, under pressure. And I wish that everybody could get a dosage of that for like 2 years. I wish everybody could know what it's like to not have a fixed income coming in that's consistent, where you get it where you can, you work as many hours as you can, then you do your best to save it, invest it. If you're smart, pay your taxes, do the right thing. There's so much with our business that it's not for everybody at all. And like, I admire you because you just keep on going, you keep on doing your thing. Before we get into that, do you have another plug for another band that you did that was just like amazing? Or because I know you've played with everybody, so is there one more that we can add to the Vixen list of just like, wow?
I don't know. I mean, after I left, or I did the Banshee gig, that was literally a one-off gig.
Yep.
And after that, the band broke up again, because the entire time we were there, they just fought and fought and fought. And I really got an experience to see why they weren't a band in the first place, why they kind of broke up. And so shortly after that, I ended up, about 2 years later, I ended up playing with Corey Taylor from Slipknot. And Corey was not doing, he was doing a solo record, the one that just came out like a few months ago. Mm-hmm. He started that back in 2008, 2009, and I was in the band Pomeroy that I was talking about, the van and trailer band, and we played in Iowa City, Iowa one night, and we got there early, which was unusual for us because usually we're late. And so we got there and there was a metal band playing. I was like, man, these guys are really good. They're called Destrophe, and their drummer Ryan Barrier and their singer Ari, we all just became friends. Just because I was like, your band is amazing, because they were really, really good. Well, fast forward a couple years later, and Ryan's in the drummer in Corey's band, and basically they needed a keyboard player because the music that he was doing as a solo artist was not metal at all. It was way more Rolling Stones kind of a vibe or whatever, that type of thing. And so they brought me in. And we did that for right under 2 years. And that was pretty exciting to me, too, because I was a huge, huge Slipknot fan when I was a kid. Or not a kid, but when I was, you know, when they came out, I was like, holy crap, what? I was working at Camelot Music in a mall.
Wow.
And I was like, what the hell, a band is this? This is insane. It just sounds like Korn on, like, you know, steroids and cocaine and everything else. Like, it was just so heavy and brutal. And I was like, how's that singer sing like that without just completely destroying his voice? And anyway, I ended up doing, you know, pulling in his driveway the first day in Des Moines, Iowa. It was pretty surreal. Grabbing my big old keyboards and taking them downstairs. And he showed up a few minutes later in his little black car. And, you know, I walked in the house. And there's one of the Slipknot masks just sitting there on the counter next to the kitchen sink for no particular reason. I was like, this is really weird. And so we went down and rehearsed, and we did a bunch of shows, a lot of big festivals. We weren't very well received because of who he was. We got put on all these metal, like heavy festivals with, you know, Seven Dust and Five Finger Death Punch and all that. But we opened up with Let's Go Crazy by Prince. And the music we played was not heavy. So people were just like, You know, they just didn't know how to receive it. But we had a great time doing it, and then after that, after that ended, it ended in kind of an ambiguous way. So I was just like, man, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. I felt like this is kind of like my one shot to do something cool, and I wanted to find something before I got too old and fat and nobody really cared about, you know. So but I ended up doing the Dueling Piano Bar, playing at Howl at the Moon in Kansas City. And in 2015, I was just like so burned out. I played every venue I'd ever wanted to play, and with all my heroes in Kansas City, and I just was like, man, I gotta get out of here. Like, this is not working out. And my friend Rich Redmond, who plays drums for Jason Aldean, out of the blue, I hadn't heard from him in like 5 years, he called me and said, hey bro, I think I got a gig that I think you'd be really good for. And he knew me as a bass player, because he, when he came through, he sat in with my cover band. I was a bass player in that band. And so he called me in February 2015, and basically the gig wasn't for me. It was Van and Trailer. I was like, dude, I'm 40 years old. I got kids. I can't afford to do the Van and Trailer for $100 a gig thing anymore. Like, what else you got? And he basically asked me what I wanted to do with my musical career. And I said exactly what I just said to you. I'd kind of like to do what you're doing before I get too old and nobody cares. Like, I want to get back on the road and do all that type of thing, but mm-hmm. have it be monetarily decent enough to where I can feed my family, you know, and then all that kind of stuff. So he's like, well, if that's what you want and you want to be a part of it, you need to move to Nashville. You need to be here. The biggest, the most important words in that conversation were, you need to be present to win. So you have to, be able to show up when somebody calls you for an audition or somebody calls you for a lunch or whatever to talk to you about potentially, you know, this or that. And that completely made sense to me. And I was kind of, me and my girlfriend were kind of at a crossroads with our relationship, not sure what we were going to do. And it just seemed like, okay, let's try it. Let's go for it. Let's just make a completely, let's uproot and see what happens.
Because I like it.
Nothing else left for me here right now, except for my friends, you know, which that was obviously hard to leave them and my two older kids, but I was also, you know, divorced at that point. Like my divorce had finalized, and I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with myself. So we ended up moving to Nashville in June, and I was getting on a tour bus with Tracy Lawrence 3 months later, playing keyboards for him. And I'd never played country in my life, and I really didn't. Like, when Tracy was popular, I was listening to Rage Against the Machine and Alice in Chains and stuff. Like, I wasn't listening to Tracy Lawrence and Garth Brooks and all that stuff. So it was brand new, very foreign music to me. And it was a lot of work to get there and learn those songs, because I wasn't familiar with a single one of them. Even his biggest hits, I'd never heard them at that point. So and that, I realized that playing that kind of music wasn't my forte, and he knew that too. So we parted ways in October, and then I went back to doing the piano bar here in town, just playing downtown, and then ended up with the Vixen gig several months later. And so here I am.
Do you have a good, we could talk about Tracy Lawrence, but we can talk about Tracy Lawrence. Is there some positive things that you can say about the time that you were with him and some?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, even losing a gig like that, you know, coming in and getting fired from something after you're the new guy in town, and you feel like you kind of cut in front of everybody, and you got this cool gig, right? And then we do these shows kind of like that Rush show you just talked about, called Loud Jams, once a month. A guy named Tom Hurst, who plays drums for Tracy Lawrence, which is why I got the gig, he puts these shows on where you know, there's a gathering about 80 musicians or whatever, and there's about 20, 25 songs. Each song has a different lineup of people. And I remember being extremely humbled, thinking, man, I got to go to this Loud Jams rehearsal. Oh. I got to face all these musicians that I look up to, and they're going to ask me, hey, how's the gig? And I'm going to be like, well, I don't have the gig already. I lost the gig already. And that was, so that kind of humility that you kind of get because of that, it was terrifying. And so I walked in, and the first guy that I ran into was a guy named Matt Billingsley, and Matt plays for Taylor Swift. And I remember thinking, And sure enough, he was like, how's the gig, man? I heard you got the Tracy gig. I was like, yeah, I don't have the Tracy gig anymore. And I just remember being really embarrassed and really kind of bummed about it. And he's like, look, man, look around this room right now. Everybody, because the Loud Jams, it was mostly at the time, was all like pro guys that played for so-and-so and this and that, and whatever. It's like, look around this room. I guarantee you almost everybody in this room has been fired from a gig in some way or another, including me. And I was like, oh, when did you get fired from? I got fired from Lady Antebellum. And I still don't even know what happened, but I definitely moved up in my gig. And I was like, yeah, you did. You're doing a lot better than you probably were in that other gig. He's like, so don't worry about that. You know, just do your thing. Something else will come along. And it did, you know, and then the second guy that I ran into said pretty much exactly the same thing. And so I felt a lot better. And I was like, okay, cool. Because I was like, man, I don't want to get kicked out of this club that I'm brand new to town and just getting to know people and then have this reputation of, you know, like I said, reputation is everything. So that was a really scary time. But it was humbling, and I learned a lot from it. And I learned from Tracy, and I learned how to prepare better for a gig next time. All of those things. And Tracy was cool. He's still cool. And I have nothing bad to say about anybody in that camp at all. It was a fun learning experience.
Think about when you said, like, I was so terrified. And I just think of all of the people in the last year that have never lived the kind of gypsy way that we live sometimes, things are uncertain. And it's got to be really terrifying for a lot of people. And like I said, everybody should be in a band for like a couple of years. You should try it, so that, you know, or just hang with somebody that is, so that you're not as upset when pandemics roll around or happen.
Oh, man.
Or whatever. Yeah. You are doing this really cool program now, or project, or it was what's the word I'm looking for? Not a symposium is like an old fashioned word for it, but what's the program that you are doing now to teach other musicians and other people just how to be better at business, or what to do, or blah, 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 like fill in the blank. What do you tell us what you're doing? That's what I wanted to have you on here for.
Oh yeah. Well, actually, I mean, it's not my program. It was something that I kind of fell into with a friend of mine. Scott Metco has this program called Music City 101.
Okay, I thought it was yours. I was all excited. I thought it was yours.
No, I mean, he just didn't. I was one of his first guests.
Okay.
To speak on. And the thing that I've spent a lot of time in the last year teaching people, especially musicians, how to set up their room and to be able to do live streaming shows and make an income. So I've been making, I would say 90% of my income has been through my live streaming shows since March of last year.
Okay.
And so Vixen hasn't played since February of last year. And so the tours are gone. Nobody's touring at all. And every once in a while I'll pick up like a private event, like a wedding or something like that, but no gigs are coming through. And before the pandemic started, I was playing downtown about six nights a week. And I kind of discovered after all this time off that even if things were to open up full on tomorrow, I don't want to go. I was playing too much down there, and I was missing my family too much. You know, I was too disengaged. So I basically figured out a way to, I think it was my last gig I did downtown was March 18th. And then the week after that, there was a band called Mash Up that's just a cover band that plays at Kid Rocks. Mm-hmm. And they asked me to come down and do a streaming show with them. And I was like, sure, I don't have anything else to do. I don't have any gigs on the books, so why not? And I showed up and I played with them, and it was fun, and made about $150. I was like, man, you guys made good money. And we had five people in the band, and we made $150 each. That's pretty good considering playing on the internet.
Yeah.
So I just kind of watched this. Chris Lee is the band leader of that group. And I just kind of watched how he did everything. And I was like, okay, so what's this program? And how does this stuff work? And what do you do? And I have all these little cameras that I purchased to record Vixen shows, record Rare Hair shows, and all this other stuff that I do. and so I can come home and edit them and put them on YouTube or whatever. And they also happen to serve, in fact, the one that I'm talking to you right now is one of those cameras. They also serve as a webcam, and they broadcast in HD, and they're really nice. So I just set up this room, and I'll show you kind of what crazy this room looks like.
What camera is that you're using? Because the pig wants to know. That's me.
This is called, this is made by a company called Zoom, and the actual title of it is Q2N.
Okay, looks good.
I got a bunch of them. But so I set up this whole room full of crap.
Wow.
And so that's, I broadcast from there. I'm playing keyboards, and I set this keyboard, this camera I'm holding in my hand on that tripod that's right there. And so there's lighting and everything. I turn all the lights on. I've got three keyboards, a drum, electronic drum kit, and then I've got my guitars all going through a Kemper. So everything's direct in terms of, like, there's nothing that's mic'd up. It's all direct input. And so I'm not sure if
it looks good.
Your folks will know what that means.
The quality of the camera is really good too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like it a lot, actually. And so I've got, the only problem is they can get a little glitchy. So I've had to send a couple of them back to get fixed. But anyway, so the answer to your question though is I spend a lot of time helping people understand how this stuff works, because I have made more money in 2020 than I've made my whole life playing from my house, you know, to people on the internet, which I never thought in a million years would have happened. But when your whole livelihood gets shut down, you have to kind of find creative ways to kind of keep things going. And so I started off, and for a lot of people, a lot of my friends that started off gangbusters, like they were making anywhere between 700 to $1,000 a night or more. For me,
what it didn't marketing to Tyson, like that's crazy. Like that's great. But like, how do you just advertise? And because of your support base, or are you finding other ways to find people that watch you?
Yeah. So for me, it started off actually the opposite. Mine started off really slow. And I was like, and I kept seeing my friends pulling numbers like 700 people, you know, and there a couple hundred people watching. I'm like, damn. And I'm like, only have 30. And I was like, what's going on? You know, but what I figured, I was doing it very consistently and now I'm to four nights a week. And when I first started, I was doing it midnight shows every night. And okay. It kind of burned my voice out, and I got tired of doing it that late and being up that late. So now I've got a very consistent schedule that I've had for several months now. Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 8 p.m. And initially I was going through Facebook until October, when the copyright stuff, the rules got a lot more strict. So my shows were getting shut down after a couple songs or whatever on Facebook. So I discovered another platform called Twitch, and yep. I've been doing my shows there and been very successful, and just continues to grow and grow and grow and get better. And I'm still, you know, doing okay, making, you know, paying the bills.
Good.
And feeding the family and all that stuff. And it's a lot of fun too, because it's all 100% based on requests from the audience. Mm-hmm. So, and what's been really interesting to me is knowing that, or I haven't had to play Don't Stop Believing. I think I've played it one time since last year, you know, and
hey, Don't Stop Believing.
Yeah. And just in Piano Man, and just like the typical songs that you play in bars. I don't play any of those songs because people know that they can request anything they want, and there's a good chance that I'll probably know it. And if I don't, I even have an incentive where, if you really want me to learn a song on the spot, throw me $20 and I will learn it right here in front of you right now. And, you know, those kind of things. And so, and it's fun. It's very interactive. And there's a lot of graphics and crap that's on the screen that's really fun. In fact, that's what I was working on before I started talking to you, where I've got this new thing where where people can blow me up, you know, so they can hit a button and there's an explosion on the screen, and you know, just stupid stuff like that.
Where do you find you? Let's talk about where people can. So you said through your Facebook page, which is what?
Facebook. Most of my stuff is just Tyson Leslie.
Yep.
But my Facebook actually is Tyson Leslie Music.
Okay.
And so is my Twitch channel. So that's twitch.tv/TysonLeslieMusic. And that's where I stream from four nights a week.
So people from Facebook that are your friends or your supporters, then they just go over to Twitch?
Yeah. So I put up a thing on my page saying, hey, I'm live now. And come on over if you want to hang out. You know, and a lot of people do. And then there's just Twitch has its own community in itself as well. Yeah. It's very, very... it's very supportive of each other. It's a different environment than Facebook. There's just kind of this unsaid, unknown thing, like no politics, nothing combative. It's very welcoming.
Yep.
And it's perfect for people like me because I don't buy into any of that stuff. I don't like it. I don't participate in it.
You want to do music.
Yeah, I just like even my Facebook feed, you're not going to find stuff about any of that stuff. It's going to be either something that's funny or something that I think is interesting or pictures of my kids, you know, or stuff like that. It's lighthearted because there's so much negativity and shitty hate stuff in the world. Like, I don't need to add to that. And I don't want to be bad to it.
As an entertainer, I think some people need to just sit down a little bit. Like, I'm not going to learn my politics from, you know,
right.
Especially from certain lead singers in Canada that are angry about everything.
Oh, right.
I just like, dude.
I mean, I'm all for anybody to say their piece and whatever they are and want to do. Like, I don't disagree with people. Like, I'm not one of those that say stick to music or whatever. I think that's really shitty too. But just
I am.
But for me, that's just not my thing. That's not what I do. But I believe that everybody should have. I mean, those platforms are available for you to say whatever you want. So say whatever you want. If you know, if you're Ted Nugent and you want to talk about politics, then cool. I don't know. It's just Dolly Parton used to talk about that and just of how to kind of keep out of it. And I really subscribe to that, even though she's kind of changed a little bit recently and whatever. But I don't know. I think when you have a voice as big as a Taylor Swift or something like that, then you actually can affect change and do things that are important. But who the fuck am I? You know, like, I'm a keyboard player for this guy and that guy, and they don't want to hear that. I just want to play music and have fun. That's what's important to me.
You did the Rare Hair shows. Tell us about that. Yeah. How was the inception made for that? Just one day, you just like, I want to get together all these great musicians and Nashville and put together these shows. Like, how did that come about?
Well, Rare Hair originally was supposed to be just a band. Me and some friends of mine, we're going to do this band that covered a bunch of deep cut 80s metal that nobody was going to care about except for deep cut 80s metal fans. And
love it.
I mean, we've covered the, you know, weird bands that people are like, who? And so, but that Loud Jam show I was telling you about, Tom's show, it kind of made me go, man, I could do something like this except for do with the 80s metal stuff. And so on the Tracy Lawrence tour bus, actually, one day I talked to Tom and I was like, hey, I got this idea. What do you think of it? Because I kind of wanted to have his blessing for it before I just went and kind of ran with his idea. And initially, my only contacts were the people from our Loud Jam show. I didn't know anybody yet. We did the first Rare Hair show the January after I moved here. Like, I didn't know a lot of people. So the first show maybe had 20 people, musician-wise. Mm-hmm. And now, aside from pandemic time or whatever, not included, our shows usually feature about 120 to 150 different musicians, singers, etc. And they're all from all walks of life. So you have guys that play on Broadway. You have guys that were original members of some of these 80s bands. Like,
wow. I mean,
we've had, you know, tons and tons of these guys, like, because they all live here now. So it's really exciting. So, like, we've had Billy Sheehan on the show, and we've had Paul Taylor from Winger and Eric from Cinderella. And we've even brought in people. So we brought in 3/5 of the band Exodus to do a short Exodus set on one of the shows and stuff like that. So
cool.
And the idea is really just all about its community building. You know, and it's also fun to see guys that play for John Party or some country yeehaw guy playing like the most obscure, weird 80s like metal stuff, you know, and they're having a blast. And so you get all these people thrown in a pot together, and it's all about just having fun. Everybody's getting to know each other and just playing music. And it's a great community builder, and it's something that I look forward to bringing back as soon as we can.
I love it. And I wanted to end on the note, just because I said you blew my mind when I was just doing a little bit more research on you before we started the podcast. And it's Baby Lift. That was like what?
Yeah. Operation Baby Lift. Yeah.
And who put together the blog that written by you? So all of these pictures and everything, like you did all of that in that article?
Yeah. So I was born in Vietnam in 74 on September 7th. Well, that's ambiguous too, actually, because we didn't have hospital records or things like that. So my birth date is actually estimated. and there were these cargo planes or even just like the Pan Am kind of old school style planes, which you saw in those pictures.
Yeah.
And they're just filled up with babies that they, you know, orphan kids from Vietnam that were post-war, because it was right at the end of the war. And there was one that went to the West Coast and the East Coast, and then one to the Midwest. And I ended up in Midwest in Denver, Colorado, which is where I was adopted from. And I lived in Greeley until 1988. And that's when I moved to Kansas City, and I spent most of my time there.
I mean, but your parents look hella cool. Are they still around?
Yeah, they're good, man. I feel like they did a great job raising me and my sister. We're all kind of scattered in different parts of the universe now, and I just went and saw my dad last weekend. He lives in this little kind of outside of Jefferson City, Missouri. So it was good to see him, and it was his birthday, so I wanted to make sure.
Is he in his 70s?
Yeah. So he's 78.
Yeah.
And my mom is the same age, and they hate each other. And my sister, she lives down in Florida, and she hates everybody. So it's like, nice. It's really funny that I end up, you know, I was the kid that was always in trouble at school and getting kicked out and getting suspended for setting fires in my desk and throwing things at teachers and being a crazy person. And so I certainly thought that as an adult, I was going to be the kid that, or the adult that was going to jail and having all kinds of problems. And oddly enough, I'm like the one person in my family that seems semi-normal to me these days. But it's that they're all good people, and it's just a thing. Like, my dad's had a lot of health issues in terms of his like physical health, and you know, my mom's getting up there. I mean, that's a pretty long life, you know. So I have no idea what I'll be like at that age or whatever, but I'm happy they're here for now, and I talk to them both every week pretty much, and that's about it.
I'm glad that they're here. And top of the hour, want to thank everybody on the Realm Network for having us, Vince Russo's brand. And I want to leave with some plugs. Again, you're doing your show on Twitch, and it is Monday, Wednesday, Fridays. When is it, Tyson?
Yeah, Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Okay. On Sundays, I do exactly kind of what we're doing right now.
Okay.
I do kind of a live podcast called Let's Talk. And last week we had Troy Lucetta from Tesla on. And this Sunday we have Britt Lightning from Vixen. And we're going to actually sit and watch the VH1 Bands Reunited with Vixen. And we're going to comment on it and just have some fun and stuff.
I think that's killer.
Yeah. And then we've got other guys coming in later in the month. Dave from Megadeth and Ellison, not Mustaine. Yeah. We have a bunch of guests lined up for the next few 2 months anyway. And it's brand new, so I'm just kind of seeing how it's going to go.
Okay.
The reason I did that is because I do metal Mondays. Mm-hmm. And when I was singing on Sundays, I'd come in on Monday. I'm like, oh, I'd be so tired for singing Sunday night that my voice was just kind of cashed out to do the, and this, as you know, I'm sure, the singing hard rock music is a little taxing on the voice, especially for a dude. I don't, I don't have one of those Bruce Dickinson, you know, high voice vocal ranges. So I have to kind of, and also even like the stuff like Metallica and Slayer and singing like that, it's taxing on the voice. So
it is.
And then Wednesdays and Fridays are just all requests, 100%, just whatever anybody wants. And
good for you. Like, I absolutely love that. And what is there any other thing that you want to plug or have people check out?
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, TysonLeslie.com, you can find my original music there and all my merch, like the t-shirt I'm wearing. I mean, the reason I'm wearing this shirt is because, yeah, a buddy of mine that designs Garbage Pail Kids made this for me.
Oh. And
so I was like, that's perfect. So, I'm wearing it because I'm going to wear it on the stream tonight because I want to let people know, I'm like, hey, I got new shirts in, so I want to get rid of them. And then, the Rare Hair page on Facebook is just Rare Hair Nashville. So if you look up Rare Hair Nashville, you can find it. But it's spelled R-A-R-E and then H-A-R-E, like the rabbit.
Okay.
Because that's such an 80s stupid thing to do is misspell your words.
You know? Love it. And I saw online on Instagram your shirts that were in. I was just like, those are really, really cool. You've got some great swag.
Thanks.
Tyson, you're so amazing, so blown away.
Thank you.
Great story, great interview. If there's anything I can ever do for you, let me know. And just thank you so much for.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks for telling everybody what you do, and you know, I know what. We'll leave everybody with this. What did you learn from 2020 that would apply to everybody, not just people in entertainment or the music business? That's something positive and encouraging for those that are out there, because we've got a lot of really interesting people that listen to this or maybe fell on some hard times, and
sure,
got a lot of disabled people and some people who get a little down in the dumps, and we want to always try to leave them on a high note. So what did you learn? What lesson, what did you not expect that might help somebody out that's out there?
The biggest thing I think, and this is that way anyway, but definitely in 2020 when you feel very disconnected from people, mm-hmm. is that your friends and your family are, they'll get you through anything if you let them. And that's a big thing, like, because when you're depressed or when you kind of are having poor me moments, I guess, for lack of better words,
yep.
it's easy to withdraw within yourself and not accept help or want help from other people. Mm-hmm. And however, I did figure out that it's just like, if you just kind of swallow your pride and reach out to folks. So there was one month where I called somebody different every day last year, because I was feeling the weight of the world on like Facebook and stuff like that. Like, a lot of people were super bummed and depressed, and it was a few months in when we were really locked down and couldn't do anything. And so I just made it a point to call somebody that I haven't talked to in a long time, or ever in some cases. So I'd get on Facebook and see if somebody posted something that I thought was like, they're kind of, you know, on teetering on the brink of madness there. I'd reach out and be like, hey, what's your number? And, you know, I'm going to give you a call. What are you doing? And having conversations like that with people that you care about, it's not only good for yourself, but it's good for them.
Yeah.
And so, whether it's family members or somebody you barely know, or somebody that is your best friend, whatever it is, don't be afraid to reach out to people. And because we are social beings, that's what we are. And so to have all that taken away from us, and that's one of the things that's great about Twitch, is it's actually one of the things that's gotten a lot of people over their own personal social anxieties, is being welcomed into a group of others. So what's fun about my shows is when I log in and I start my shows, there's usually a trailer or something going on at the beginning before I start, and I see all these people saying hello to each other before they even say hello to me, and that is awesome. And none of these people, my biggest supporters on these shows are people I've never met in my life, people that live in Chicago and New York, and even people like last night was hello from Germany. I'm like, what time is it in Germany right now? So that kind of stuff is really cool. And just trying to, it's easy to withdraw, but sometimes you just got to force yourself to even contact somebody that, you know, And there's a good chance that that person's really excited to hear from you if they hadn't heard from you for a while and be like, oh man, why is he calling me? You know, or why is she calling me? I haven't heard from her in forever. And so doing that from once in a while was therapeutic, not only for me, but I found for the other people too. So give it a try.
Great advice. I want to thank everyone for listening today. Thanks for being here. Thanks to all of our patrons. Thanks to everybody on the Rome Network, Vince Russo's brand. Follow Mr. Tyson, Leslie. He's a badass. He's awesome. He's taking names and numbers. And at the end of every episode, we always give a little golf clap. So clap, clap, clap. Let me see. Clap. Pause. Thanks, everybody. Signing off. As always, stay safe out there and stay golden.
'You know the song. Well, let's make it about the men this Valentine's Day. You know I'm on Cameo, and you know how much I love to do custom shout-outs and greetings. But this Valentine's Day, if you're single, or if you're alone, or if you're just a little tweaked out with the COVID, let's flip the switch. Now, I'm taking this from Francine, Extreme Francine, with her bikini cameos. Francine, thank you for the idea. I'm stealing it blatantly. But let's do a little flip. I would love you to book a Cameo. Don't use the Apple app, by the way. Just book it directly from the link, cameo.com/Goldilocks. I'll list it. Take it from there. I want you to write a custom script, like a love letter to yourself. I want you to tell me all of the things that you love about yourself. Okay, bros? Write it down, and I want to deliver it back to you in the bikini of your choice. Valentine's, whatever color, I've got them all. Because I like swimsuits and I like the beach, I like summertime, so I think it's pretty badass. Thanks, Francine. It's a great idea. Love letter to yourself. Book one with me. Let me deliver it. Signed, sealed, delivered. You know the gimmick. I want to brighten your day and make you smile. Check it out. Cameo.com/, I think it says Goldilocks. Find it. It's not hard. Love ya. Mwah.